Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Quarter One 2018 JinkoSolar Holding Company Limited Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to queue for a question, you will need to press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Sebastian Lui. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today for JinkoSolar's first quarter 2018 earnings conference call. The company's results were released earlier today and available on the company's IR website at www.jinkosolar.com, as well as on the newswire services. We have also provided a supplemental presentation for today's earnings call, which can also be found on the IR's website. On the call today from JinkoSolar are Mr. Chen Kangting, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Cao Haiyun, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Jin Miao, VP Global Sales, and Mr. Sebastian Liu, IR Director. Mr. Chen will discuss JinkoSolar's business operations and company's highlights, followed by Mr. Miao, who will talk about the sales and the marketing, and then Mr. Cao, who will go through the financials. They will all be available to answer your questions during the Q&A session that follows. Please note that today's discussion will contain forward-looking statements made under the safe harbor provisions of the U.S. Private Security Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve inherent risks and uncertainties. As such, our future results may be materially different from the views expressed today. Further information regarding this and other risks is included in JinkoSolar's public filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. JinkoSolar does not assume any obligation to update any forward-looking statements, except as required under applicable law.
谢谢, 下面请, 各位早上, 晚上好, 感谢大家参加今天的电话会议。
Thank you, Sebastian. Good morning and good evening to everyone, and thank you for joining us today.
本季度组件车货量 2015兆瓦, 环比减少 18.8%, 同比减少 2.6%, 营业收入 7.281亿美元, 环比减少 28.1%, 同比减少 20.9%, 毛利率由上季度的 11.6% 上升至 14.4%, 主要由于多晶硅价格回落, 以及由于技术进步和减少 OEM 使用带来的成本优化。
We shipped 2,015 megawatts of modules during the quarter, a decrease of 18.8% sequentially, and a decrease of 2.6% year-over-year. Total revenue during the quarter was $728.1 million, a decrease of 28.1% sequentially, and a decrease of 20.9% year-over-year. Gross margins, however, increased to 14.4%, compared with 11.6% of last quarter, as we benefit from the drop in polysilicon prices and further optimization of our manufacturing costs as a result of continued technology improvements and reduced OEM usage.
三部委5月31日联合发布的光伏新政是市场情绪受到影响。尽管新政旨在加速推进平价上网进程，加速低效产能出清，以及缓解新能源资金赤字的压力，但市场对新政的初步反应强烈。我们预期 今年中国市场的需求仍将达到35吉瓦以上的水平，其中下半年13到14吉瓦，包括领跑者项目约7个吉瓦，光伏浮顶项目约4吉瓦，以及由地方政府推动的分布式项目和其他平价上网项目约2吉瓦。此外，户用市场的增长也有可能再超预期。
Market sentiment was impacted by the new policy jointly issued by three Chinese ministries on May 31st. The new policy aimed at increasing the pace of grid parity, accelerating the removal of outdated capacity, and releasing the pressure of new energy fund deficits. Despite the strong initial negative reaction to the new policies, we expect demand in China to still hit 35 gigawatts plus in 2018, of which 13 to 14 gigawatts will be during the second half of the year, including approximately 7 gigawatts from Top Runner Program, 4 gigawatts from PV Poverty Alleviation Projects, and 2 gigawatts from local government-supported DG projects, in addition to other grid parity projects. In addition, the residential market growth may be once again above our expectation.
新政策出台也不都是负面的。 随着产业链价格全面降低，公司的规成本和非规成本进一步优化， 这不仅将抵消了下半年ASP的下滑， 长期看还将使我们受益。 2018年全年公司订单可见度已超过 80%， 其中大部分是锁定价格的海外订单，并包含较好的预付款。公司目前在满产状态，并且下半年也会基本维持满产。由于多晶硅价格的下降和公司持续的技术进步， 我预期公司的毛利率和净利润在下半年还将持续提升，因此新政对公司的业务的影响是相对有限的。而对于行业，我认为新政的影响也将是短暂的。我对公司长期发展前景以及行业的可持续增长均充满信心。
The silver lining behind the new policy are that they will actually benefit us over the long run, as we expect to see a decline in cost across the industry chain, allowing us to further cut costs for both silicon and non-silicon to offset the impact of module ASP decline in the second half of the year. We already have great visibility for the whole year 2018, with over 80% of our order book already filled, of which most of them are overseas orders with fixed prices and a number of payments already made. Our production capacity is fully utilized now and will remain so during the second half of the year. Therefore, it's safe to say that the new policy will have a relatively limited impact on our operations. We even expect our gross margin and net profits will improve in the second half of the year as a result of a further decrease of polysilicon price and our technology improvements. We also believe the impact of new policy for the industry will be short-term, and we are confident in our future business prospects and long-term growth of the industry.
后续间呢会更详细地介绍市场情况，我再次强调几点：首先，得益于公司的全球化布局，海外订单预期将占全年总出货量的 80% 左右。公司并不依赖单一市场。其次，太阳能在全球竞争力日益增强，我们可以看到平价市场需求的增长，例如重新放缓火力的南欧市场，包括西班牙、葡萄牙和意大利，看到迅速崛起的新兴市场需求，如拉丁美洲、中东和北非。 以及随着成本进一步下降，将被重新点燃的印度市场需求。最后，我们仍然对中国需求保持乐观。展望2019年，除了零保值项目、扶贫项目和分布式项目，我们预期2019年下半年还将会出现大量结合新型商业模式的平价上网项目。
I will let Jenna go over the market details later, but I would like to highlight a few things here. First, overseas orders are expected to account for about 80% of our overall shipments as we benefit from our global footprint. We do not rely on a single market. Second, SolarWorks has become increasingly competitive globally with demand driven by markets achieving grid parity, including resurgent demand in southern European markets such as Spain, Portugal, and Italy, as well as booming demand in new emerging markets such as Latin America, Middle East, and North Africa. We also expect that with further cut in costs, demand in India will rebound strong as well. Third, we remain optimistic about Chinese demand. Looking into 2019, aside from Top Runner program, Poverty Alleviation Project and DG project, we also expect to see large amounts of grid parity projects combined with new business model appear in the second half of 2019.
公司技术致力于高效技术的研发和应用，同时优化产品的成本结构。公司的一体化成本进一步降低，尤其是单晶硅片在氧气回收、金刚线限耗和硅片薄片化方面均取得了持续进步。二季度，公司的P型单晶破壳电池效率达到 23.95%， 打破了自己保持的世界纪录。公司的先进氢化技术、浮动阻栓技术也取得突破，预计将在年内实现量产。 公司的半片叠加贴膜技术在产能、质量等方面全面领先行业。随着市场对高效产品需求的不断增加，我们已做好了充分的准备。通过持续投入，发展行业领先的技术将为客户提供质量最优、性能最可靠的高功率太阳能产品。
On the technology front, we continue to devote resources towards the application of high efficiency technology, we are optimizing the cost structure of our products. Our integrated costs keep improving, especially for mono wafers, including improvements in argon recovery, diamond wire usage, and wafer thickness. During the quarter, we broke our own world record for T-type mono per solar cell efficiency, which hit 23.95%. We also made substantial progress in developing advanced hydrogenation and floating busbar technology, which we expect to apply across our mass production line by the end of the year. Our hot cell combined with light reflect film technology is also leading the industry in terms of capacity and quality. With demand for the high efficiency product increasing, we are fully prepared to provide our clients the highest quality, most reliable products with the highest output in the market as we continue to invest in industry leading technology.
产能方面，公司的硅片、电子片和组件的内部产能在一季度末分别达到九 G 瓦、五 G 瓦和九 G 瓦。我们预期2018年年底产能将达到9.7G瓦、6G瓦和4.5G瓦，其中包括5.7G瓦的单晶硅片产能，以及3.5G瓦的 PUC 电子产能。公司对产能扩充保持一贯的谨慎态度，并力求保持资本开支与业务持续增长的平衡。
Turning to manufacturing capacity, our internal wafer.Cell and module capacity reached 9 gigawatts, 5 gigawatts, and 9 gigawatts, respectively. By the end of the first quarter of 2018, we expect to reach 9.7 gigawatts, 6 gigawatts, and 10.5 gigawatts, respectively, by the end of the year, of which approximately 5.7 gigawatts will be mono wafer, approximately 3.5 gigawatts will be PERC cells.We remain cautious about expanding our manufacturing capacity and will continue to maintain our flexibility to balance the CapEx and the business growth.
展望2018年下半年和2019年，中国的政策变化带来市场的不确定性和降低的国内需求，使市场环境充满挑战。但作为行业领导者，公司优秀的全球化销售与产能的布局，令公司能够灵活、迅速地适应任何政策变化。我们将充分利用公司在品牌、技术和全球市场布局的优势，扩大市场份额，进一步巩固公司在行业的领先地位。
Looking at the second half of 2018 and 2019, the change in policy in China will create a challenging environment by creating a market uncertainties and a lower domestic demand. But as industry leader, our extensive global sales network and a geographically dispersed manufacturing facility allow us.To remain flexible and rapidly adapt to any policy changes, we are fully prepared for the market consolidations and new era of grid parity. We will take full advantage of our brand, technology, and global infrastructure to expand our market share and further consolidate our leading position in the industry.
话题交给 Jonas 之前，我来介绍一下业绩指引。基于当前的预期，2018年第二季度公司组件出货量在2.4到2.5G瓦之间。2018年全年组件出货量在11.5到12G瓦之间。
Before turning the call over to Jenna, I will quickly go over our guidance. Based on the current estimates, total solar module shipments will be in the range of 2.4 to 2.5 gigawatts for the second quarter and 11.5 to 12 gigawatts for the full year.
谢谢绍兴。接下来，现在我将话题交给 Jenna。
Thank you, Sebastian. With that, I will turn it over to Jenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chen.We shipped 2,050 megawatts of solar modules this quarter, slightly above the high end of our Q1 guidance. Looking into the second half year, while the Chinese market will be impacted by the new policies, we expect to see global demand remain healthy and strong. We already have sufficient orders in hand with full year visibility exceeding 80%. Our capacity utilization rate remains at 100%.And new emerging markets kept growth momentum, all of which leaves us confident to generate solid financial and operational results for the entire year. Look at the geographic distribution of our shipment in the first quarter. New emerging markets, including Middle East, Latin America, and Africa, accounted for approximately 40% of total shipment. The Asia-Pacific region was the second, followed by China, North America, and then Europe.This demonstrates the result of our global reach. continued geographic diversification and forward-looking strategy, which have also reduced our reliance on any single market. Shipments in China will account for less than 20% of shipments this year, with U.S. shipments expected to increase during the second half of the year as we begin delivering for the big contract we have signed there. As Ms. Chen just mentioned, despite the headwinds created by the new policy in China, we believe Chinese market will still reach 35 gigawatts for 2018. Our focus during the second half of the year will be on the top runner projects and the poverty alleviation projects. DG program will, with solid business model or that are supported by the local governments, are also expected to generate new demand. We remain cautiously optimistic about demand in China in 2019 because, first, given the current rate of the cost reduction, which we believe will generate more grid parity projects coming online next year. Second, local government supported DG and the residential market still have lots of potential. And third, resilience of China market, the biggest solar market in the world, is now underestimated. Turning to U.S. market, after gradually dragging down inventories in the channel during the first half, demand there has begun to increase again. We expect the full year demand to reach 9 gigawatts this year and hit 11 gigawatts next year. ASPs in the U.S. market remain relatively stable as U.S. capacity remains limited. While our manufacturing facility in Florida is expected to begin delivering products in the second half of the year, the U.S. market continues to show strong vitality and a great potential despite the impact from tariffs. The only uncertainty is the potential escalation of trade war. Turning to the Asia-Pacific region, as a result of aggressive early-stage bidding, many projects in India have been delayed, which resulted in a substantial amount of the unreleased demand. However, as the crowding effect in China intensified after announcement of new policy along with falling ASP, we expect the Indian market to even less demand. The Australian market is stronger than expected as big utility projects drive demand, and we have over 1 gigawatt contract there secured. Japanese subsidies continue to fall as the bidding system there gradually step in and more self-contained projects pop up, which are creating new opportunities. The European market has significantly rebounded. Aside of Germany and Ukraine, demand is being driven from southern European market with high energy costs such as Spain, where solar is winning energy bidding. Italy, Greece, and Portugal are now following the same pattern of the grid parity project. We are very optimistic about the future market prospects there. Emerging markets such as Egypt, Jordan, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, Argentina, and Brazil continue to grow in importance and are gradually becoming the main driver of global demand growth. We will continue to strengthen our leading position in the Latin American market and see more opportunities in the Middle East, where big petrol exporting countries are increasingly determined to promote and invest in the application of solar technology. ASPs during the quarter decreased slightly when compared with last quarter. ASPs may continue to decline in the second half of the year given the impact from China's new policy. But as Ms. Chen has explained, first, a huge amount of our overseas contracts have already been signed. And second, our costs will continue to fall as the prices across the entire industry can decrease, especially polysilicon costs. We are now in a good position to take advantage of this trend. Following our streak from last quarter of high-level exposure with NHK specials, in January, Jinko Solar was the only PV module manufacturer to be featured on CNN's Marketplace Middle East Renewables special that aired on CNN TV channel internationally. Continued exposure from prominent media helped us reach a wider audience outside of the solar industry, helping to generate the long-term demand. in March, Jinko Solar's status as a market and technical leader in this industry continues to be recognized. We received the top-ranked PV seal in Austria, Australia, and Germany by EUPD Research, which awarded us the seal based on service of hundreds of installers on their module brand preference. From the technical leadership perspective, we were named by TUV as the winner of the polycrystalline group PV module energy yield simulation at All Quality Matters Solar Congress. This third-party recognition from a highly respected institution illustrates again the great technical performance of our product. In Q1, we attended 8 trade shows and participated in 53 conferences. We also hosted 35 customer trainings and 38 co-marketing events with key partners across the globe. Our active global marketing events continue to allow us to reach and educate new customers about Jinko Solar's high-quality product. Now I'd like to turn over to Charlie.
Thank you, Jenner. I'd like to walk you through our Q1 results. Total solar module shipments were 2 gigawatts, down 19% sequentially and down 3% year-over-year. Total revenue was $728 million, down 28% sequentially and down 21% year-over-year. The sequential decrease was due to the decrease in shipment of solar modules. Gross margin improved to 14.4% compared to 11.6% in Q4 and 11.2% in Q1 2017 as a result of decrease in raw material costs and reduced use of OEM. Our blended cost improved to 31 cents per watt compared to 33.6 cents per watt in Q4, benefiting from the decrease in raw material costs, especially the polysilicon price and technology improvement. The operating expenses represented 11.6% of total revenue compared to 10.1% in Q4 and 10.3% in Q1 2017. The sequential increase of operating expenses is primarily due to the decrease of the module shipments. EBITDA was $43 million compared to $45 million in Q4 and $30 million in Q1 2017. Net income was $0.6 million. This translates into basic and diluted earnings per ADS of 1.6 cents. Non-GAAP net income was $1.7 million. This translates into non-GAAP diluted earnings per ADS of 4.8 cents. Now, let's move to the balance sheet. By the end of Q1, cash, cash equivalents, and restricted cash were $457 million. Compared to $424 million by the end of Q4. The accounts receivable due from the third parties were $637 million compared to $691 million by the end of Q4. Inventories were $750 million compared to $657 million by the end of Q4. The total debt was $1.3 billion compared to $1.1 billion by the end of Q4. The net debt was $879 million compared to $718 million by the end of Q4. At this moment, we are happy to take your questions. Operator.
Operator, we are open to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to queue for a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press 0 followed by 2. Again, that's 01 on your telephone keypad now. Your first question comes from the line of Philip Shen from Roth Capital Partners. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the questions. The first one is on your guidance. You know, based on your shipments for Q1 and your guidance, it looks like you expect to ship volumes in the second half to be meaningfully higher than the first half. I think the mix will be something close to 40% in the first half and 60% in the second half. Jenner, I think you mentioned you're 80% booked. And so how strong are these bookings? You know, in past cycles, we have seen down cycles. We've seen contracts get canceled with the new ASPs that are lower. Could you see any cancellations? And if not, why not? You know, I think you guys have a bunch of prepayments and so forth. But maybe talk about how this time might be different, if it is, relative to past down cycles, and why you continue to expect your bookings to remain in place.
Yeah, so this is Jenna. Thanks for your question. Actually, from the sell side, we have seen the impact from the policy of China's government. However, the total market, the total segment of our customers, mainly, they are working in the utility level, which they play really long term, and that's why we have secured a sufficient and also solid contract with those players as a long term instead of the spot market deals. We do see some of the subcontracts being signed across this industry, but we do not see a significant volume from our customer side. We have very tiny amount of the contract has been impacted by this new policy, mainly from China.
Okay, good. So you expect then most of your bookings, the 80%, to be effectively, to remain effective. Can you talk about the geographic mix of those bookings in the second half of the year especially? So, I think China is only maybe 20% of your overall mix. Does it go even smaller in the back half, Q3, Q4? What is the overall geographic mix in Q3 and 4?
Currently, the number we have is, I can share with you and we saw is that we still see the emerging market take a big part of our shipment plan, and followed by U.S. and also, the Asia-Pacific regions across the Asia region, like, the Japan, like Australia, etc., all those countries, including India, will contribute a big part of our plan as well. Sure, those three parts will be the main contributor in the second half shipment plan.
Okay, great. I think Tenzong mentioned that your net profit and margin will increase in the back half of the year. With your stable bookings and supply chain pricing coming down so much, it seems like you might be able to expand your margins. So you guys had decent margins in Q1 of 14.4%. What kind of margins do you expect for Q2? And more importantly, what kind of margins do you see for Q3?
Philip, you're right. I think the policy put us as a very good position to streamline the supply chain, and we are expecting a significant cost improvement starting from June this year. So regarding the gross margin, because we have very solid booking, and we discussed and we have already received a lot of prepayments, and we think that most of the booking will executable. So back to the gross margin, we think the second quarter it's quite stable quarter by quarter, but for the second half year we expect a moderate improvement for the gross margin, and it's highly possible the gross margin will over 15%.
Okay, great. That's great. So you know, in terms, you guys mentioned in your prepared remarks, thank you, Charlie, that you're 100% utilized. Is there a scenario, especially as we're heading into Q3 now, where you are able to procure wafers and cells more cheaply than you can produce? Is there a scenario where you guys go less than 100% utilized? You know, I know you've maintained your guidance here, but given the rapid reduction of ASPs in the supply chain, is that possible to be able to procure more cheaply, buy the wafers and cells more cheaply than what you can produce? Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah. This is a good question. I think, you know, you're right. The wafer and cell, the market price have been dropped dramatically, you know, in recent months. But if compared to Jinko, because we are the cost leader, and for the multi, at the same time for the mono, we have improved a lot, you know, in recent quarters. So if we compare, you know, our cost with the, you know, the market price, we are still very competitive, even, you know, for the wafer and the cell, both for the multi and mono. But the good thing is, because, you know, we still face capacity constraints, and we need to leverage OEM, you know, continue in the second half year. So, you know, the OEM, the cost is going to be squeezed a lot, which will help us, you know, for the gross margin and profitability.
And meanwhile, Philip, I think we have to look into this rational spot market price instead of a short-term emotional market play, right? So in the long term, we believe some of this super low emotional spot market price is not quite sustainable.
Okay, that's fair. And one last question, as it relates to your cost structure, you talked about improving cost structure in the back half. You were about 31 cents for both in-house as well as blended for Q1. What do you expect that to be in Q3 or let's say Q4 for the quarter, not necessarily year-end, but what is the average Q4 in-house as well as blended cost structure given some of the pricing that you're seeing? Thanks.
Yeah. In terms of cost improvement, we are targeting, I think, a 20% improvement, and roughly for the multi and mono perk, the cost will improve to 24 to 25 cents. And for the blended cost, because, you know, the we expected the, you know, the lower price from, you know, for the sale and OEM module cost, I would expect, you know, 1 cent higher, you know, in terms of the blended cost.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand, Q4 cost structure in-house could be about 24, 25 cents, and then the blended cost could be a penny higher. And then when you look at the 2019, does that, can you continue that 20% type improvement? If not, you know, what kind of year-on-year improvement would you expect in Q4 of 2019?
Firstly, for 24 to 25 cents is by the end of the year. It's not Q4 average number. And second one for the 2019, and you know, it's too early to, you know, evaluate the cost in, you know, roadmap. But we expect, you know, because of you know, the new policies in China, and push the industry, you know, to respond and to make the China a lot to reach the great priorities, particularly for the second half year 2019. So we still think a lot of, you know, room, you know, in the industry to improve the cost.
Okay, great. Thank you, Charlie, Jenner, and Chen Zong. I'll pass it on.
Thank you, Philip. Your next question comes from Mahi Mandloi from Credit Suisse. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the question. This is Mahi from Credit Suisse. Just regarding the cost structure, could you talk us about where you see that cost reduction coming from? Because that's almost a 6 to 7 cents cost reduction from your current structure. Probably 1 or 2 cents comes from the polysilicon side. So could you just help understand like what is driving that cost reduction for this year?
I think Mahib, and you know the polysilicon has been down dramatically, right? You know the price, and now it's $10 to $13 for multi and the mono poly. So its contribution around 2 cents, and for the long silicon cost, you know, we think it's around 2 cents to 3 cents.
Got that. And is that because of shifting to mono or mono perc, or is it just efficiency improvements across all technologies?
Excuse me, could you repeat your question?
Yeah, the 2 to 3 cents reduction for non-silicon, is that driven by higher efficiency or new technologies, or is that for both multi as well as mono?
Well, I think a combination of the efforts from the industry and including the, you know, technology, production efficiency, the polysilicon, you know, cost improvement, and as well as, you know, the new materials.
Got that. And on the cost structure, so you said 24 to 25. So is mono significantly higher, or is it in line with multi cost structure over here?
Mono perks, you know, cost will be higher, you know, than the traditional, you know, multi.
Yeah, that's a mixed one. So that's not where a concrete number. It's just a mixed number. We're having on mind. It's not a detailed number.
Sure, got that. Makes sense. And just switching gears to the U.S. market, and so last week the IRS ruled over here that tax credits would now be available technically through 2023 as long as the project starts construction in the respective tax credit years. So I'm sure this is probably too early for you, but have you seen developers pushing out deliveries to later years so that they can avoid import tariffs in the U.S. and still take advantage of the tax credits after 2021?
Yeah, Mahis, our team really knows, and we talked to some of our customers. I think in general, the customers will execute the plan they have right now, because it's already on the road, and they don't have plans to pull them back. And for the long term, I believe such policy or such decision will generally be positive to the solar or industry as a general, because it will further extend the installation timing by another, I'd say, even 2 years' time. And also, you know, it will encourage more developers to start their development cycle investment in order to get more, projects online. So in general, we believe it's kind of positive to the solar industry as a whole. Meanwhile, you know, we don't see a significant delay from our customer end.
Got that. Go ahead.
Sorry, Mahab, I just want to supplement, you know, if you look at this cost structure, you know, the cost we are talking about, it did not include the warranty cost, shipping cost, which, you know, depending on different regions, it's usually in the range of 1 cent to 3 cents. So, yeah, just supplement.
Yeah, that's fair enough, yeah. The U.S. Contracts. So you have multi-gigawatt shipment contracts in the U.S. markets. Could you just talk about the nature of those supply contracts, like this fixed volume or fixed prices, or this fixed duration, and what flexibility do the developers or you have on these contracts?
Yeah, so Mahip, we are not in a position to disclose the detail of it,
But from what we have planned and what we have seen is the plan from our customer end is very solid, and their financial model and the project execution plan is very reliable. That's what we can say.
Good then. And you prepared remarks, you spoke about the China market picking up in second half of 19 and 2020, and potentially with the IRS, you'll also have more demand in early 2020s, as per your remarks. So are you, when do you plan to expand capacity to address these markets, or when do you think that decision will come in? And then the other side is just like, how does this impact consolidate your remarks on consolidation? Like, when do you see potential consolidation in the industry?
We believe the industry will consolidate, but you know we think it could happen, you know, in 2019, and particularly for the capacity with out of, you know, technology, and you know, for the companies without branding and global sales capabilities.
Got that. And could you just touch upon your capacity? Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Could you just touch upon your capacity expansion plans to address the China and the U.S. demand?
You mean this year or next year?
No. Either this year or later years.
Yeah. For next year, it's too early, and we need to continue evaluate the market situation.
This year we are quite stick to our plan. You can see our, as Mr. Chen just said, our plan of the capacity by the end of the year. We just announced that, so we are quite stick to that plan.
Okay. And just last question from me, like how much capacity addition are you seeing from competitors or peers on the poly wafer or cell in 2018 and 2019?
Sorry, can you repeat? We missed you for the first part, sorry.
Yeah, just trying to understand how much capacity expansion are you seeing other companies in the industry add this year and next year? In the polysilicon wafer and cell supply chain.
I don't. My keep this is general. I don't think there will be too many new capacity expansion plan. I think according to what our peers have announced that their expansion plan, it might be possible some of the expansion plan will be postponed or even put on hold for a while given the current market circumstances. So for the detailed number, we do not have at least I don't have a number on my hands right now, but I think the market, the capacity expansion plan will be slowed down quite significantly.
But probably we think polysilicon, the CapEx expansion will be, compared to other parts of the during the value chain, polysilicon expansion will be bigger. Because, you know, it's still in the process of domestic polysilicon to replace the overseas polysilicon. So.
Got that. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mahid.
Thank you, Mahid. As a reminder, if you wish to queue for a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Again, that's 01 on your telephone keypad now. Your next question comes from Brian Lee from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the questions. Maybe first one, just going back to an earlier question. The the 2018 volume guidance, you know, you haven't changed it here. It implies 50 to 60% year-on-year growth in the back half off of a pretty flattish, you know, first half trajectory. And as recently as Q1, you were talking about, you know, China being your biggest market. Obviously, there's been a policy shift there. You've taken your view down in China by, looks like, 10 plus gigawatts versus what you were thinking 3 months ago. So, you know, question is just where's the confidence coming from that you can grow that much in the back half of the year and you don't have to change this full-year guidance view? And it seems like something is offsetting the weaker China that, you know, as of 3 months ago, you weren't thinking was going to be that down on a year-on-year basis. So just trying to reconcile how the guidance isn't changing when your biggest market as of 3 months ago, per your, you know, comments on the call, has changed quite dramatically.
Yeah, so Brent, this is Jenner. So firstly, if you look into our Q1 geographic mix, you will see, you know, the percentage from China is much lower than the other key markets. So that's why we are seeing, you know, even there's a headwind from the China new policies, and we are confident about the guidance. And secondly, regarding the China demand itself, you know, our plan to be focused on, you know, the demand from China, especially from this top brand program together with the poverty alleviation programs, are still there. And those two main demand drivers are still not be impacted too much. And, you know, the canceled or the decreased demand from this DG market together with some mainly DG market and some, you know, the standard or the no more, let's say, ground mountain projects where we have not been planned for the year of 2018 too much, even at the beginning. So that's where our confidence comes from.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe just staying on China for a moment, you mentioned the 35 plus gigawatt view for 18. You know, I know there's policy factors that could come into play that aren't transparent yet for 2019, so it's a bit early, but you talked optimistically about 19 in China. What's your general view on what demand could look like if you think about the different buckets, you know, top runner, PV, poverty alleviation, and then I wanted to drill down into grid parity projects a bit. How big do you think that bucket of demand could look in 2019 from, you know, these unsubsidized volumes in China?
I think personally, I'm a big fan of China market for 19, even 20, because really the you know, this new unsubsidized market will be a huge one. If we look into the numbers, I think the China 19 number, the floor number everyone knows, it will be 21 gigawatt, but I think it will be highly possible to go up to 30 plus, even 35 plus gigawatt again by 2019. And by 20, I think the number will be even greater than 19. 20 will be even greater than 19. The mainly is if you look into this unsubsidized market, and you will see a huge market potential, because the benchmark price now is, let's say, 35 RMB cents per kilowatt hour. However, even we look into this year's top runner program in Qinghai province, the lowest bid price is already like 31 cents. It's already below the benchmark, right? So I think that happened before the new policy, right? After the new policy, with such a huge jump of this decrease of the market price, I think that will further accelerate the a great parity market in China, and the government will be very happy to see it.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's helpful.
There's one. Hi, Brian. This is Sebastian. And there's a one part of the demand we haven't discussed yet. This is a residential, because as all
we know that the residential market is, you know, within the quota by the new policy. But in fact, we already hear lots of rumors about, you know, the policy. There may be some, new policies about the residential ones. So we know that last year it's almost 2 gigawatts of a residential project. So still, great potential for this segment of demand.
Okay. No, that's helpful. Thank you for that. Just on grid parity, one last question on that. What do you, the 35 RMB cents per kilowatt hour, that's, you know, helpful from a benchmark perspective. What are you generally assuming is the crossover point for installation costs to get to those grid parity levels on large-scale solar in China? And then what are the embedded returns you think that will entice developers to build on an unsubsidized basis, whether unlevered or levered? Any color there would be helpful.
Yeah, that will be a complicated question, Brent, because the benchmark price are different from different provinces. The 35 cents I just mentioned is from Qinghai province. Actually, if you look into some eastern coast province, the benchmark even is over 40 cents. So that varies a lot. Second, regarding the returns or the EPC price, I think that varies a lot as well because, you know, it depends on the land cost, the grid connection cost, etc. But in general, we believe the current or the last round of the top runner program has successfully built up a business model to prove that the grid parity market is there and it won't be that difficult to access.
Okay. A couple questions on pricing from me, and I'll pass it on. Just maybe housekeeping. What was the ASP average for Q1, and then, you know, we're sitting here in late June, so what's the assumption for Q2 on average ASP for the quarter, and then second half pricing?
Brian, I think we do not disclose the ASPs anymore, but what we can see is that the Q1 ASPs are slightly lower than Q4, very tiny changes, let's say single-digit, even low single-digit percentage change. And the Q2 compared with Q1 will be another slight decrease again. And for the second half ASPs, definitely it will decrease because the market price falls. But you see that, you know, our cost is decreasing as well. So the margin looks better than first half.
Okay, maybe just one follow-up there. You have 80% booked, it sounds like, with the prepayments and clarity on pricing. The 20% that's uncontracted today, I'm sure you're working on the quoting activity for that. How much lower are the quotes coming in on that uncontracted capacity after having digested the current state of the state in terms of supply demand and what real-time pricing is doing? Just curious, how strong is the locked-in pricing relative to what you're seeing in the real-time pricing
environment? I got a question. Let's say this. So after the China new policy announcement, we have seen the market price has been dropped approximately 15%. That's what we have seen from that's mainly from China. And is that number helpful for you?
Yeah, that's helpful.
We're not quoting aggressively now in China because, you know, now we think the market definitely, the price is it's not rational. So we'll wait and see. We already have lots of orders on our hand. So we'll keep our flexibility to see what happens in the second half of the year until the market cools down. So that's our strategy.
Yep.
We're not in a hurry.
Yeah, you're not in a rush to lock in pricing. I guess on the flip side, what we've seen in past downturns is that customers can be somewhat reluctant to step in when they think pricing can keep going lower, the whole, you know, catching a falling knife phenomenon. Are you seeing customers waiting on placing new orders because they think they might be able to get better pricing the longer they wait out?
It really depends on their pipeline or their project schedule, right? Some of them might have the flexibility to say to wait for another couple of weeks or even months, but some of them they may face this result of they may face the pressure of this field timing, construction schedule, etc. So they might have to make some decision now or immediately. Or that's why we still see just some of these happening in this market.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. I'll pass it on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Your next question comes from Alex Loi from UBS. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my questions. So I have two questions. First one is that about your exchange loss. So what's your strategy now to offset potential movement in the currency and any chance there in the second half to recover some of the exchange loss? And second question is that about your view about the global demand. So what's your estimate about the global demand this year, especially for the emerging markets like India, Middle East? Thanks.
Sure. For the first question, foreign currency exchange, and in the first quarter, particularly in January, the RMB appreciated by 3% to 4%, and we hedged around 50%, but if you look at our exposure, 80% is overseas sales revenues, and we still get hedged, in the first quarter. But RMB has been, depreciated a lot in the recent months, so we are expecting we will recognize, a lot of gains from foreign currency transactions. And we'll continue to monitor the foreign currency transactions. And it's good, when the RMB depreciates, it's good for both gross margin as well as the foreign currency gains. And at the same time, we'll hedge some portions based on our assessment for the currency movement.
The second question, we assume in general, this year, global demand will increase by a double digit, probably reach to 16 gigawatts the whole year for the overseas market.
Sorry, you mean your shipment or the global demand? I mean, what's your view on
global demand? Global demand.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, so the logic is to say the global demand, even if China does some decrease, let's say by 15 gigawatts. However, the new lower price will further accelerate or to pull in some demand from other emerging markets who were waiting for a low price reaching their target previously. So that's a kind of offset, let's say.
You estimate about the India demand and based on your order flows from there?
Not only India. India is one of them, but lots of markets will do the same because they have their own budget waiting for the module price or the system cost reaching their target price.
Okay, thank you.
Did that answer your question? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you much.
Thank you, Alex. As there are no more questions in queue, I would now like to hand the call back to your speaker today. Sebastian, please go ahead.
On behalf of the entire Jinkosaurus management team, I want to thank you for your participation and interest on this call. If you have any further questions or concerns, please feel free to contact us. Have a good day and good evening. Thank you and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for your participation. You may all now disconnect.